Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
1, 2, 3, 4!
Come join us on this trip. No, more like journey. We're throwing out the script. We don't charge a penny.
So it's a pretty slow
news week.
Like, nothing too crazy. I mean, entertainment wise, I feel like, you know.
I was gonna say there's still shit going down, bro. There's a whole two countries beating the shit out of each other for no goddamn fucking reason because the other one thinks the other one's indoctrinated.
I should have rephrased. It's been a slow entertainment news week.
Yeah,
right. A strike is still going on, so you know there isn't a whole lot of stuff going in terms of updates. You know, it's going into its second month, so
it's expected to last through summer.
For a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did a bit of research today. I didn't realize that like the guy actually leading the front lines is like the spokesperson for the WGA is the creator of Law and Order, which is pretty cool.
Dick Wolf?
No, his name's like Lee Watterson or some shit. That's what I read online.
What the hell is? Who's Dick Wolf have to do with Law and
Order? No, it wasn't like Law and Order as a whole. I think it was the Special Victims Unit, which like Dick Wolf may be involved in, but like he's not the, like just their spokesperson has something to do with Law and Order. And I'm like, yo, don't mess with this guy. Like, you know, he does his research. Like those shows are known to be legit with the law and shit. but yeah, I was just doing like, I just wanted to see what the update was because usually like throughout the week, my phone I get buzzed a bunch of updates. Like I've followed relevant hashtags. You know, I've watched enough videos where like they're popping up on my Instagram and my TikTok. But like it's kind of just stopped now. The only thing really making news is like the TV shows and the movies that have had to stop. But I mean, it's not as heartbreaking because I think what's kind of stopped all that news is not only the fact that are we going to be struggling for content next year? A lot of content has decided to end this year. In the space of 1 week, we lost Succession and Ted Lasso.
Yep.
And Barry.
Mm-hmm.
Ow.
I mean, for Ted Lasso, I don't think the plan was ever to go beyond three seasons, especially if you.
I think
you look
I
kind of
especially and watching this last season of Succession, I struggled. Great season, I'm on the bandwagon of I think this shit's great, but like I'm also glad it's ending, and the same for Ted Lasso, but I think maybe like these shows have all like. They've done enough. They've told the story they wanted to tell, and it's rare that a writer actually gets to end this shit. But are writers now sort of... Are shows being created with the idea of... Like, let's take Scrubs, for example. Like, against Ted Lasso. Scrubs just seem to go on forever. 23 episodes per season. And even then, it ended and then it kept going in my eyes.
Yeah.
But whereas like Ted Lasso, like football is as ongoing as medicine in some cases. Like you can trade the whole season away. Ted Lasso could get, you know, he could have just got fired and someone else been hired, but like he's still there or something. He gets hired by a new team or some shit. I don't know. Like, you know, I feel like you could have kept it going. Like Scrubs had a revolving door of background characters, but I guess Jason Sudeikis, you know, getting paid TV contracts now is actually like getting paid football contracts. It's, you know. You imagine, like, I don't think like a TV show like Scrubs could ever happen today. You know what I mean? Think about how much, like those, like all those actors would want, like the like Dr. Cox, JD, Elliot, Turk, Carla. They'd all want big bucks. And even then, towards the end, fucking the janitor would want big bucks. Like, yeah. So I kind of get it, but like back to the point, are TV like are they deliberately writing TV shows now to end sooner rather than later? You think?
I think so. At least, because, I mean, think about the way, because you think, you obviously, you know, you use Scrubs as an example. It ran for a total of 8 seasons, and then it had the extra season, which was supposed to be like a spin-off kind of situation.
Bullshit!
Which, it was ass. You know, obviously, it hurts. We don't talk about season 9. But it's one of those, I feel like it's one of those things that, like, you know, Netflix has begun that thing of canceling everything after 1 or 2 seasons.
Yeah, and like, you know, and has that had a knockback effect on creators, you think?
Yeah, like the idea of having a show that has longevity that you can be working on for years and years, I feel like is an old adage. It's an old idea that's been completely destroyed. So, but it kind of forces you, like you said, you know, to think of the endings. Like, you can't just keep writing and writing and writing for the sake of writing.
Yeah.
If you have a story that you want to tell, it's like A to B, and B is going to take me 2, 3, 4, 5 years to get to, then and that's all I need. I feel like that's more doable.
Yeah.
It's more acceptable, especially if TV seasons, like, you know, we kind of talked about it before, shorter seasons, you know, it's less money. It's less expensive. But on the flip of that, because you have shorter seasons, you don't have to pay writers and actors for as much. Quality goes up.
Yeah, 100%.
I think that's the trade-off.
There's pros, there's cons. Like, as a creator, there's like, I see a lot of cons, but as a viewer, you know, there's a few cons, but there's a lot of pros. But like let's take a show still ongoing that I hope doesn't overstay its welcome, cause it was like actually 2 shows actually, Shrinking and Severance.
Yep.
I could see both those shows like maybe one more season for Severance. I think if they give that 3 seasons, the uniqueness of the idea will start to fade. And I don't think a lot of people watched season 1 anyway. Good word of mouth, but I don't think a lot of people watched it. It's not like people aren't rushing to Apple TV to watch Severance. And then you got Shrinking, again, Apple TV. So fucking good. Again, not enough people watched it. I'm trying to tell everyone to watch this series. And everyone who does ends up binging it. And it's, you know, you heard it here first on the podcast, folks. And if you don't believe me, go back to fucking January, my dudes. Big man over here on the other side of the phone was like, yo, this show's going to be sick. And I was like, huh? I was scratching my head like a little fucking monkey. Give me none of Shrinking. and now I'm like, fuck yes, we're good. But like, again, don't see that being,
it's so good,
1 or 2 more seasons.
Yeah, like that's not a show. And it's also that it puts you in that mindset now when you're watching a show that's coming out, you're like, oh, I don't see this getting a long run just because of the story or the way it's being told. And it's a weird conditioning that people are getting used to.
Yeah,
where you can see the beginning of a show, watch it, and watch its entire first season, and be like, one or two more. And then,
but then you got shows like 9-1-1 that are getting like multiple spin-offs, and the original show's still going. Like these old people that watch these TV shows are like at, you know, 6 p.m. in the evening. We call it pre-watershed over here in England. That's literally when all the old people are at home, like, well, what are we watching?
FBI.
basically my parents. Like, they watch all this shit, and I'm just like, how? Like, how? Watch this. Give this time of day, not this. This shit needs to go. Like, come on. This procedural, like, shit. I thought we were done.
It's the same.
I thought we left CSI
thing.
Back in the 2000s, man. In terms of other news, Big Man decided to start the podcast over here saying slow news week. Well, not for America, my guy.
Yeah.
Because actually, the Democrats and the Republicans finally shook hands on something.
Mm-hmm.
You've not risen, but it's on the way to, you're rising that debt ceiling, my guy.
Yep. And it's insane to me that it's, I say that it's insane to me that it's taken so long, but it's also like, I'm not a complete dipshit. I understand how these fuckers work. It's not insane that it took this long. it's just fucking annoying that it did more than anything.
Yeah.
Debt ceiling's getting raised. That's good. You know, we can avoid another financial crisis. Like, it's so fucked that our generation has lived through more financial crises than any other generation. Like, oh, we had the Great Depression. That's fine. You got the biggest one. But we keep having them.
We keep having them.
We've outdone you in pure quantity. Congratulations, right. You right. Had quality.
All right, Syndrome. I've outgrown you.
This is my villain origin story, bro.
Sebastian's origin story over here is like, it all started when I was told to give $126,000 to no one. Who am I in debt to?
Fucking everyone, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. You wake up and you blink. Oh, wait. That fly that I thought was gone before we started this podcast has returned.
Yeah, hold on. I got to close my window because my neighbor has just like decided to mow his fucking lawn. I don't want to catch.
Oh, no. I can't hear anything, but I'm pretty sure your mic's picking it up.
We'll see.
I just know this fly is just going to be like, oh, what's this fluffy thing over here? And just land on my mic. And it's just like half the podcast is buzz, buzz, buzz. If it does, I'll just bitch slap my mic. No. I think he's chilling. I think he's exhausted. He's had a long day of annoying me.
Right, so shifting gears, we got one more thing that we want to talk about before we get to the episode.
Start of the NBA Finals. Denver Nuggets versus the Miami Schmeat. Schmeat?
Schmeat?
Big Schmeaty claws. These claws aren't just for attracting mates.
Fuck's sake.
Fucking SpongeBob. It's literally still a part of my life. I'm a 29-year-old human being, and I still quote SpongeBob like it was yesterday. How? This show was like, there's more addictiveness to this show than fucking Nando's sauce, and that's saying something. Yes, I've actually been following the NBA Finals, the playoffs this year. I had no idea the NBA was so big that there's actually a play-in tournament before the playoffs begin. As in, like, yeah, you know, you had a mediocre season, but it can't be considered bad. So I guess, you know, here you two face each other, and whoever wins gets to go to the playoffs. Miami had to go through that shit. They are the eighth seed. Sebastian, this is the lowest seed you can be going into the NBA. If the Miami Heat managed to beat Denver Nuggets and Nikola Jokic, which is like the only person I know who's on the Nuggets, he's the only person they ever talk about. Like, all these TikTok, like, all these sports analysts, it's all, like, I swear to God, it's just Nikola Jokic and crew. Basically, the first Avengers, it was Iron Man and friends. That's basically what, like, the Denver Nuggets is. Whereas, like, on the Heat, you've got this Jimmy Butler character who's apparently meant to be, like, one of the next best. Mm-hmm. But if Miami Heat managed to overdo the Nuggets in a best of seven, they will be the first ever eighth seed to do it.
Fucking A.
That's pretty cool, man.
Mm-hmm. You said it was like a Cinderella story, right?
Yes, it is a massive Cinderella story. And we, you know, me being the sports fan that I am, mm-hmm. I love a good Cinderella story. You know, yeah. Especially the classic story of the groundskeeper from Caddyshack, you know, former groundskeeper turned Augusta winner, Masters, the youngest to ever do it, 459 yards away. He's going to get about a, nine iron, I think. As soon as you said Cinderella story, that was all I thought about. He got a hold of that one. How do we go from NBA finals? There's another thing coming to an end. Mm-hmm. And that's Quentin Tarantino's career. Boom.
Oh, okay. That's
as right. best as I can do,
that's
bro.
Fair. That's like, fair. That's
if you want to find a better way, by all means.
Nah, that works. That works for me. Like, okay, that works. So, he's in the process. What is his next movie called? Like the Critic or something like that.
The Critic. It was meant. Everyone thought it was going to be about the true story of like a critic from the 1970s, 80s, famous for like pretty much hating everything kind of shit. But apparently it's not. It's actually about a porn critic.
Amazing.
Yeah. So, I guess we've got Tarantino overly sexualizing women because he's not done that before in any of his movies. Spoiler alert.
What a way to go out.
He does it a lot.
What a way to go out, you know? Like, I mean, obviously the talk about this movie, aside from it, you know, being his next movie, is that it's potentially his last movie that he will
potentially his last
after.
Movie and also he wants to work with a 35 year old actor who's never worked with before, which people mm-hmm. seem to think he may be looking at Michael Cera, someone who looks like they could pull off 1970s.
Porn critic in the 70s,
honestly. But these are just rumors, like you know.
Yeah.
With Tarantino, it's like Marvel. Unless you hear it from Marvel's own Twitter or Kevin Feige, like the biggest grain of salt you can find. Yeah. This is just rumors I've heard, but like the porn Michael Cera using an unknown actor. But the one thing I'm pretty sure, you know, until he proves otherwise, yeah, Tarantino wants to bow out.
And, you know, good on him. You know, there are a lot of people kind of coming to that realization in the entertainment industry for, you know, obviously for different reasons. Like Bruce Willis ending for health reasons. He's calling it quits. Mm. Daniel Day-Lewis called it quits. It's a really weird time. Like, there's so many people just, like, deciding they're done. And it's crazy to me. Because, you know, we've talked so much about, like, the older generation in terms of Hollywood and stuff. Like, just gripping. We talked about Spielberg last time. And, you know, he's still making movies. He's still making great movies. But, you know, he's one of the old generation that's,
he's
like...
He's one
you know,
of the old
still,
guard, I like to call.
Yeah, that he's, you know, he's still going. So it's always interesting to see when one of the old guard decide to hang it up, you know, who's essentially going to step up, or because it leaves that void, it leaves that opening, you know, creates that vacuum for opportunity. So it's always interesting to see where that goes. But, you know, that's for a later day. Today we're talking about Tarantino, and we are going to do something we've never done before. We are going to rank all of his fucking movies.
Yeah, I think, like, so, you know, last week we each chose three Spielberg movies that, like, sort of that mean the most to us. It's like, if we are doing this sort of series of directors, you know, I suggested to Sebastian, we mix it up. We try to find different ways of talking about these directors. You know, when it comes to, you know, maybe we could do, like, next week we could do two directors at once. We could pitch Zack Snyder against Christopher Nolan. two champions of DC.
I mean, if we're gonna go that route, I would love to see a fucking Michael Bay v Zack Snyder matchup, because that shit would be fucking crazy. Just the amount of unnecessary slow motion in both of those fuckers' repertoires would be so fun to talk about.
Guy Ritchie over there at the bar in the back corner's being like, "My slow motions mean nothing to you."
Guy Ritchie slow mos, just because we're on it. Guy Ritchie slow mos makes more sense. Zack Snyder and Michael Bay are so fucking wheel and deal with all of that shit. You don't need to slow mo every time some motherfucker steps out of a car. It's unnecessary.
Oh, 100%.
But that's just me. Okay, it's Tarantino. We're talking Tarantino today.
It's the hero shot, isn't it?
It's getting a little heated.
This shit just got real.
This shit just got real. Camera spanning, slowing down. Everyone's slowly
Don't forget the low angle, bro. Low angle left to right.
Yep.
Debris just coming from nowhere. It's like, these guys are on Miami Boulevard. Oh, actually, no. Debris makes sense.
Okay, so I'm going to throw it to the break a little bit earlier than we usually do. And when we come back, we are ranking the very best of Quentin Tarantino. We'll be right back.
Sebastian's list is wrong.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Oh crap! I forgot the two characters we created last week. I know one of them was David. Is it David?
David and Sasha.
David and Sasha. Sasha. I only slept with Mary twice.
I will commend you. You said you were going to keep it going, and you did.
At least I clicked. I was like, wait a minute, who are them two motherfuckers? Every time I'm like preparing like for the podcast's like sort of main idea, I'm gonna like sort of like the David and Sasha like story. There's gonna be Mary.
It's in
the saga of David and Mary Sasha. Mary being right. Sasha's twin sister.
Right. So I guess the way we kind of talked about doing this is we were just going to kind of read off how we ranked.
Read off our lists.
Just kind of discuss it.
I don't need to know why. Like, honestly, most of these movies are big enough where if you're any kind of movie watcher, you've seen them, you've heard of them. Mm-hmm. You don't need to hear me and Sebastian absolutely. Saying, fucking, you know, I love the gore in this one. I love the boobs in this one. Like, nah, like, most of these movies are kind of like, you can take them or you can leave them, or you can see the high art in them. Mm-hmm. So I just thought, like, the funny side of today's list actually comes from whose list just got it wrong? Like, you may think I'm wrong. I may think you're wrong. I think there's going to be some glaring differences. I also think there's going to be like some pretty obvious similarities.
Yeah.
I don't know. I may be talking out my ass. Man, I'll hit you so hard in your teeth you won't be know if you're spitting or shitting. right. Who's going first?
Do you want to go ahead and go first?
Here we go. I'll go first. No. All right. You give a man the choice. Like, I'll go first. You know, she never lets me go first. So, You know, she doesn't even exist. Right, here we go. Number 10, Death Proof.
Okay.
Number 9, Kill Bill 2.
Okay.
Number 8, The Hateful Eight. Didn't actually realize I'd done that, but I did. Number 7, Jackie Brown.
Okay.
Number 6, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Okay.
Number 5, Reserved Dogs, Reservoir Dogs. So I'm trying to find funny names for these movies. Number 4, Killing My Bills. I'd love to do that.
Okay.
Kill All My Bills. Number 3, Inglourious Basterds. I've got a funny story about Inglourious Basterds I'll tell later on. Number 2, Django Unchained. Django. Chain that some bitch up. And then number 1, like, if you don't know what's left, it's Pulp Fiction. Yeah. Pulp Fiction's number 1.
Okay.
All right, dude. All right. I'm typing mine out, so give me 2 seconds. I need to...
No worries.
When I'm following along. Let's put Sebi. Haha, call you Sebi. I know you don't like that. My computer just auto-corrected it to Debbie. So you're now Debbie, Sebastian. All right, Debbie, give me your list.
You motherfucker. All right, so number 10, Death Proof.
Yeah, Double Penetration.
So number 9, Hateful Eight.
Ooh.
Number 8, Jackie Brown. Number 7, Kill Bill, Volume 2.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say.
6, Django.
Whoa.
5, Inglourious Basterds. Number 4, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. 3, Kill Bill Volume 1. 2, Pulp Fiction. And number 1, Reservoir Dogs.
I don't know if I could talk to you now. I thought we were friends. I thought we were more than friends. I was planning my whole 30th about coming over to Vegas to come see you. My list is right. Your list is wrong. We'll start there. I knew there was going to be some differences. Are we the same on anything besides Double Penetration? No.
No.
We are completely different. I thought we were going to... Like, that's the only similarity, which is basically Death Proof is just some overindulgent bullshit.
Like, you know, it was... I was legitimately concerned, like, we're going to match so much. Like, I don't know what the fuck we're going to talk about for this episode. But now I feel like we have shit to talk about.
We have shit to talk about. I just want to... Like, the reason I've put Death Proof last, which is probably not why anyone else puts Death Proof last... Not because of like how long it is or how overindulgent it is, like is it too overly feminist? Is it too overly masculine? What the fuck happens to Mary Elizabeth Winstead's character?
I don't know.
Zoe Bell and crew, Rosie O'Dawson and the other one in that. I just watched this recently. And I can't like I remember the actors' names more than the characters. They go off to do Shipmast on, like, they're doing the whole vanishing point shit, and then they get chased by Stuntman Mike. And then Stuntman Mike turns out to be a complete pussy 14 months after, you know, being a complete badass, which is kind of just really weird. But they, like, as collateral, they leave Mary Elizabeth Winstead's character with the farmer who owns the car. And, like, basically saying, oh, yeah, you know, like, and they basically tell this guy, oh, she'll suck you off. Like, the movie ends, and I'm just like, so, like, she dead? Like, what happened?
Did she suck him
off? It's just so un-Tarantino. Because if you think, some of his movies are overly long to give closure to characters that I didn't really need closure for.
I mean, it's less for me for I just didn't like the movie.
Yeah, no, honestly, yeah, like it's definitely like one of those. I try to like it, and I just can't.
Like I've only ever seen it like once, and my ex was like, "You're a Tarantino fan and you haven't seen this movie?" I was like, "No, I haven't seen it." And I was like, "You know, it's Tarantino. I'm giving the benefit of the
doubt." It is one of those movies that, like we were even speaking about this before the podcast started. Some people consider there's only 9 Tarantino movies.
Yeah.
And I think this is the movie they either forget. You had the argument that there's an argument for Kill Bill 1 and 2 being together.
One movie.
But I think it's Death Proof because it's actually part of the Grindhouse. Which is Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez sort of together.
Which to me is funny because we've talked about Planet Terror when we did our zombie episode and we both spoke fucking praises, and then the flip of it is I don't like Death Proof.
I don't like this movie. Yeah, nah. There's things I do like about this movie. I mean, it's the it was the beginning of the, you know, if you were around. Oh, sorry. Dinner coming back with a vengeance. If you're around YouTube, 2014-15, CinemaSins, the whole so-and-so is not giving me a lap dance in this scene.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of started that the movie was advertised with, I think it's Rose McGowan's character, giving a lap dance to stuntman Mike. And that scene in the theatrical release of the movie wasn't there. They cut past it. The only way to see it was to get the DVD release. And people were like, how dare you? How dare you remove a scene in the trailer? It's almost as bad as the removal of McLovin. Sounds like a sexy hamburger. Like, I love that line from the trailer. But it's not so in the movie.
It's like a sexy hamburger.
Like, we've spoken about Death Proof too long. It's number 10. We don't really give a shit about it. Movies I think we can just bypass because, one, not many, how many people have actually seen it? How well do you remember it? Jackie Brown, Hateful Eight, can take them or leave them. They're in our bottom five. Good movies, memorable moments. But I just think Hateful Eight, for me, just... That movie's 2 hours, 42 minutes long, man.
It's so long.
I was texting you whilst I was watching that movie, and I could hear it, and I was like, I don't need to see this shit. These motherfuckers are talking. They're just talking.
It reminded me of when we were playing. I remember when we initially got Red Dead Redemption 2. We won't stop playing it because, oh, you're writing for so long. Oh, enter cinematic mode. That's what this fucking movie feels like.
Bro. The amount of people I've told this shit to and the glass shatters for them on Red Dead Redemption 2.
Mm-hmm.
They would send me, it's like, oh, the story's great. You don't have to do the whole, build the village stuff. I was like, yeah, but if I don't, there's going to, I feel like I'm not getting the full experience of the game. And I want to play the game to get the full experience.
Yeah.
For me, the most perfect, well-rounded game I've played over the last couple of years, Spider-Man. Perfect, length of story, unique side missions that aren't story missions with a different overlay. unique missions. The collectibles I actually wanted to go out and collect. Loved all that shit. And the way story missions come to you, sort of as you progress the story, not just all at once, so you're not over leveling. It's fucking awesome. Red Dead Redemption 2, man. If your map is so fucking big that traveling from A to B, your game is telling you enter cinematic mode, maybe I need to go left to right I need to do left to right to this son of a bitch. You don't have enough shit in your fucking game. Which is why Rockstar decided to drop that some bitch like a sack of potatoes. Everyone's like, oh, why are we getting GTA Online shit? Maybe GTA Online is still one of the most played games on Twitch. And Rockstar's going, how about fucking live service games? Give them some fucking content rather than the two people still playing the story mode. You know what the most longevity about Red Dead Redemption 2 is? The horse's testicles shrink in the snow. Ooh. Right, moving on. Jackie Brown. One good bit from this movie. Mm-hmm. AK-47. When you absolutely, positively have to kill every last motherfucker in the room.
You know what my favorite scene from Jackie Brown is? Is Sam Jackson and Chris Tucker, they're having this conversation, and Sam Jackson is annoyed, and he gets Chris Tucker to get into the trunk of a car because he's going to
hire him. He just drives around.
He drives around, opens the trunk. Hey, bang, bang. Just blows him away. That shit had me rolling, dude. That shit was so fucking funny.
And then you got Robert De Niro. Hey, I'm talking to you. Are you not listening to me? Hey, I've had plenty of boyfriends that are way harder than you. De Niro just turns around and pops her in the face in the middle of the fucking car park.
Dude, I will say the opening scene I think is pretty cool because obviously it's that nod to The Graduate, you know, Jackie Brown.
Yes.
The
escalators. And, yeah, the moving walkway. The I never know what these motherfuckers are called, but every airport has them.
Yep.
Although you feel lazy in LAX when you're on them. Like you're on your way out of LAX, you're on the walkway because you don't want to walk. You don't want to be sitting down anymore. But then there's just some like healthy looking motherfucker that just like steamrolls past you, and I'm just like, you think you're better than me? Like, what up? What up? You want to go? Like, as soon as I get off this walkway, we've thrown hands. Oh, you're already in the queue to.
You're gone.
Yeah,
you're gone.
Honestly, okay. That looks a lot quicker than this. Like.
All right, no, I understand. I fucked up. You made the right call. I'm still on here. I'm trapped. Thank you.
Fucking Heathrow doubled down. We don't even have a walkway. We got us a some bitch of a tram. Hey, you got to get in this some bitch to go to this part of this some bitch to go to that part of the some bitch. What gets me out of this some bitch? You're a long way from there, motherfucker. You remember leaving Heathrow? The maze to go on. All,
yep.
You got to go up these stairs. You got to take this tram. You got to get in this queue.
Yep. That was some shit, dude. Dude, I remember when I was leaving, I was like, oh, I had to take two trams to get to my fucking gate. I was so confused. I was like, and I kept thinking, like, do I have to take this? I'm not sure. And I kept asking and like, I kept getting guided one way or a different way, and I was just like, "Oh, fuck me!"
No,
man.
don't ask for directions in Heathrow. Nobody knows.
But I mean, it obviously worked out because I'm here. So
I was gonna say, yeah, you got home, you got there in the end. I think
Kill
biggest,
Bill Volume 2.
Kill Bill Volume 2. I feel like we both have that pretty low. I've got it lower than you. I think for me. Why did I put this so low? Why did I put this lower than Hateful Eight? I saw this recently. I feel like I've been a bit harsh to Kill Bill 2. I just think if you see how high Kill Bill 1 is just so much better. I just think I feel like if you'd mess around with the length of it all, this could have been one movie. I think Kill Bill 2 is definitely way too long, but Kill Bill 1 isn't that long.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like you could have added a little bit more, but like Kill Bill 1, you got the crazy 88. But I just remember Kill Bill 2. She like most of the movie is Uma Thurman stuck in a coffin, and then she goes from that to talking to Bill for like I'm pretty sure there was 50 minutes left of the movie, and. The baby had just been put to sleep. 50 minutes of this movie is dedicated to Uma Thurman and Bill talking and a little bit of fighting towards the end. I'm just like... And you're like, for some reason, Bill starts talking about fucking Superman.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, okay. Tarantino, lay off the mushrooms, pal. Christ. Yeah. We get you can write. We get that you're a little bit of a nerd, but we understand that Superman is always Superman. His his superhero persona is Clark. Yeah, we get it. Like, didn't need to go into detail about the history of Superman. Like, Uma Thurman is there. It's like, I don't know who Superman is.
You don't know who Superman is.
You stupid son of a bitch. What are you, a robot? You got amnesia from getting shot in the face? Come on. it just seems to go, like, even though it's 2 hours long, Kill Bill 2 just seems to go a million miles an hour for no goddamn reason. All the good fights are in Kill Bill 1. Mm-hmm. All the good baddies are in Kill Bill 2. I honestly know Tarantino used to love himself some Michael Madsen, but he's actually not that good of an actor.
He's definitely tapered
this
off.
This motherfucker talks like this in every goddamn movie that Tarantino puts him in. I'm a character who's seen a lot of things. I've got some history. I've done a lot of stuff, man. You don't want to know about it. Now here's a flashback of everything this character's done for the past 45 years. Even though he said he didn't want to talk about it, we're going to show you it instead. He spends all of fucking Hateful Eight in the corner as Joe Cage, telling people to nail Pretty the much. Door in. You gotta nail that son of a bitch shut! Blizzard, blast it wide open! Yeah, we get it, there's a blizzard, fuck.
God damn it.
God damn it. Yeah, there's Kill Bill 2, like, yeah.
No!
I think the big one I want to talk about is, what did Django Unchained do to you, man? I put this son of a bitch second. You put this son of a bitch 1, 2, 3, 4. You got this. You got this shit sixth. Why? What did it do to hurt you?
So
Django.
So essentially, for me, it came down to like comparing, because I had it in my five, and then you know, obviously, I mentioned that I felt like I was forgetting one, and you mentioned Inglourious. So I was like, okay, Inglourious. Like my top four. Or locked, because those were, I knew that those, but I knew, so it was essentially trying to decide between whether or not I liked Inglourious or Django more. Mm. I liked Inglourious more. And yeah. It literally
even
comes
though you
down,
forgot it before we started this podcast.
But, because I've always liked Inglourious more than I have liked Django, mm-hmm. and it literally has to do Christoph Waltz.
He's in both.
I think he's better in Inglourious than he is in Django. I love him in Django.
I will agree that I think Christoph Waltz's performance is better in Inglourious Basterds than in Django. But I just fucking love that Jonah Hill scene. How about we don't use the hoods now, but you know, we remember them for next time, and next time we do it right. Is anybody got a spare hood? No, ain't nobody got a spare hood. Man, I can't see shit, you know, in mine. Oh, I just fucked mine up.
When they did the roast of James Franco, Sarah Silverman was talking about his role in Django.
Yeah.
And she was like, you know, Quentin Tarantino approached Jonah Hill about being in his spaghetti western, and all Jonah Hill heard was spaghetti, and he said yes. Oh man!
I love that scene. But I think, like, I honestly, this was the movie that made me fall in love with Leonardo DiCaprio. Up until this movie, I didn't see it. Mm-hmm. He'd been in some good shit. He was in that really long Christopher Nolan movie, Inception. He was good mm-hmm. in that. Like,
yeah,
I prefer Joseph Gordon-Levitt's performance in that. But this movie, like, really showed me, like, what he's capable of. And then you've got Samuel Jackson, like, just doing... Like, I'm pretty sure Tarantino was just like, Sammy, just... Here's a description of your character. Just say lines you think are right. Like, that's how good his character is. Like, when we get to Candyland, this movie just, like, explodes. And honestly, Jamie Foxx, like, you know, may he get better, for the love of God, but he owned it. He owned
it. It's crazy that Will Smith passed on this.
Yeah, honestly. Like, that motherfucker needs to stop passing on shit, man. Like,
right.
Matrix, Django Unchained. And the movie you did choose over Matrix was Wild Wild West, bro. Sack your agent.
For real.
He's got the same agent as Gerard Butler, I swear to God. Inglourious Basterds, let's talk about this. I still feel like you have Inglourious Basterds a bit too fucking low. It is better than Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
So, for me, obviously, the big thing is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is... It's a period piece. It's one of my my favorite eras, especially in Hollywood history.
Okay. So now, like, see, this is why we chose to like sort of do it this way. I'm beginning to understand why you've chosen things. This era is your shit. This is why I want you to direct my Atari idea, because this era is your shit. I should have seen this one coming. But even then, I still think Glorious Bastards is a better movie.
I will concede story wise. Inglourious is better.
Yeah.
Just for me, aesthetically, the way it was done, the look, the feel of it, Once Upon a Time is just going to do it for me more.
Yeah.
Like, and I think that's kind of what it came down to for my last three too. Like, how the feel of it, it's because it's not, obviously all of them are fucking amazing. All these movies are great. All these movies are fucking dope. But like, because like you, I personally feel like you have Reservoir way too low.
Okay, so you coming for the big dog? You're coming for the big dog. You like some misogyny with your movie, Mr. Sebastian?
It's not even the misogyny.
This movie may as well be called Sausage Party, bro.
Oh no, yeah, no. But for me, it's what the movie represents versus what the actual movie is. You know, it was his first movie. It was his first big movie. He did a bunch of big shit with almost nothing. Like the whole, like not seeing this crime go down, but you see all the after effects of it is fucking amazing. The use of the soundtrack is amazing. Mm-hmm. And like, it's a movie in terms of rewatchability for me. It's one that I've seen more times than anything. And I feel like it's the movie, it's of all of his movies from a directorial standpoint, it's the one I study the most. I love the way he uses the camera, especially in that Michael Madsen, stuck in the middle with you bit, moving the camera away from when the dude slices that fucker's ear off.
He was told to do that for ratings. He was told, being the young, like being the nobody director that you are, you will give this an NC-17 if you show this shit.
But doing that allowed him to do all the other shit that he's fucking done.
True. I just think, like, out of all of his other movies, I get that it is his first. I get there was probably finances. Just this shit felt so... I don't want to say stagey, because, like, that has a different connotation in terms of movies. But, like, what I mean by stagey is it could be a play.
Mm. Okay.
You know what I mean? Like if you want to, like, usually you go, take A Few Good Men.
Yeah.
A fine piece of work from Aaron Sorkin, long time fan of the series, we know. A Few Good Men.
Absolutely.
A Few Good Men was a play before it was a movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I feel Reservoir Dogs is. It just doesn't have that sort of... It just doesn't have that sort of movie magic for me. And again, it's just a lot of talking. A whole lot of talking.
To like counter that in terms of like, the movie magic. For me, what does it in terms of movie magic is the performances of Harvey Keitel, Tim Roth, Steve Buscemi.
Harvey Keitel is honestly phenomenal. Like, we will get to him when we get to him. Mm-hmm. Well, I think you might be the only motherfucker who I think puts Reservoir Dogs over Pulp Fiction. I can't believe I actually know someone who has ranked Tarantino movies. I thought the one thing we were going to be similar on. Mm-hmm. I thought there was a chance that maybe because of your likeliness of Grindhouse and Planet Terror that maybe Kill Bill 2 or Hateful Eight, even Jackie Brown, could have come under Death Proof. But again, not surprising that it's last. It's most people's last. But
yeah,
Matt, we need. I need to cut to the chase. You have not put Pulp Fiction first. I'm staring at my abbreviation here because I couldn't. I wasn't going to write down the whole movie, and it just says PF/RD.
Mm-hmm.
And I, like, even you know, because like I've not looked at you and my phone screen for a good 5 minutes. Because I'm just staring at these four letters, bro. These four letters and this one symbol. And I'm like, honestly, where I am right now is Squidward in the place out of time, where he's just alone. And all, like, rather than alone, it's just, just in different lettering, like classic Word document shit. This shit be zooming in like someone's made like a PowerPoint for school, like in 2005. The swoosh, like, like it flips around. All the letters like go from back to front. Like, gee. I know you just explained it, Reservoir Dogs. It's the one you study the most. Honestly, that's where I'm at with Pulp Fiction. That's the one I study the most. Yeah. But gee, my dad might not let you back in the house. Actually, hang on.
You're gonna come on a trip. I'm gonna go find where Mr. Joe is right now. Hey, Dad.
All right, Mr. Joe.
my dad's face was a face of sugar.
He was sugar. Dude, I heard his what?
You should have seen his eyes squint. You should have seen my eyes
squint, Sebastian. No, honestly, I'm glad my computer corrected your name to Debbie. Because until you correct yourself on this podcast to me, you are Debbie.
You motherfucker.
You better come out swinging next week, sir, with whatever director we're doing. Zack Snyder, Michael Bay versus... you better have some good...
Are we going to do that?
I'd like to do that. Like, we'll talk about it. Like, I thought, I'm definitely, like, maybe Christopher Nolan next.
All right. No, we can definitely do
Christopher Nolan, his superhero movies versus his non-superhero movies.
Yeah.
Although, you know, there's not that many. But we can rank them.
Okay.
I don't know. We'll talk about
because
it.
Because we talked about...
Like, we're not finished here. We're not finished, Sebastian.
No, I know.
We're not fucking finished. Because...
No, I understand.
I've got Kill Bill lower than you. You've got Kill Bill third. I've got Kill Bill fourth. So what is it about Kill Bill that you like so much?
I mean,
What does it for Kill Bill 1 for you that you've got it... I've got it fourth. I kind of want to talk about why I've got Inglourious Basterds in my top three, but like I want to know, like we've spoken about.
So
I need to leave Pulp Fiction because we could easily go for another hour about why Pulp Fiction is second. But I get it. Reservoir Dogs, that's your boy. Kill Bill.
So, you know, for those who don't know, I know you know. I love me some martial arts movies. Love them.
Yes.
Love Kung Fu.
I know you do.
Love all of that shit. So, you know, you Tarantino said yourself,
does.
Kill Bill. the best fight scenes from both movies are in Volume 1.
100%.
They are some of the most...
100%.
They're the most cartoonish, over the top, but also beautifully done fight sequences. The whole fight between Uma Thurman and Lucy Liu in the snow is so fucking gorgeous. The sequence of her training for, you know, this master and stuff, her fight with Vivica Fox at the beginning in the house, so good, man. It's so good. Like it that's what does it for me. Like which is also what annoys me about Kill Bill Volume 2. It's like it slowed down so fucking much.
Yeah.
Like you had this high octane start. And then, and I get it. You know, you want to slow down to get to like the emotional heart of it. But it's like you blew your load too quick, dude.
Yeah, 100%, 100%.
So, you know, and that's,
How do you go from destroying the Crazy 88 and Owen Ishii to then being shot by some trailer trash piece of shit? I guess that's the, like, that's literally what Tarantino does. Like, the one thing I want to talk about with Tarantino, I love this motherfucker's ability to bring comedy out of, like, to, like, coincidence. I first noticed it, like, so, I don't know about you, but I rewatched a lot of Tarantino before this week. Like, the ones I didn't watch were Pulp Fiction, Django, Inglourious Basterds, and Reservoir Dogs, and Once Upon a Time. Once Upon a Time, seen it recently. The other four, I've seen so many times. So I rewatched Kill Bill 1 and 2, Hateful Eight, Jackie Brown, Death Proof.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, honestly, Kill Bill wasn't as high on my list until I rewatched it. And it was because, like, in the beginning, when Copperhead, Vivica A. Fox, she goes to get the cereal. And the cereal's called Kaboom. Mm-hmm. And that's where the fucking gun is. And I was just like, that motherfucker did not put a gun in a cereal called Kaboom. Like, it's like, just like little moments like that are just, like, are so good. And it's like, there's a joke that doesn't really pay dividends until Kill Bill 2, which is when, like, she goes to Japan. And she says she can't speak Japanese all that well. But in Kill Bill 2, she's, like, holding conversations in Japanese like it's nothing. And I was just like, there's this motherfucker. Like, but honestly, like, one of the things about Kill Bill that I really like, that I've only just learned recently, you know this, you know me, I've been watching this Wu-Tang and American Saga.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the things, I think you actually meant it, like, for my life, I've been calling him RZA, but you're actually meant to pronounce it RZA.
That makes sense.
Even then, it's not just RZA. You got to do the as well. Like, he calls himself the RZA. Yeah, it's pretty cool. That's how he does it. That's how it's done in the series, and that show is created by him. So I think he knows how he wants to pronounce his name.
Yeah.
This isn't an actor choice. So the music is done by the RZA, and if you watch Wu-Tang, and even then, this motherfucker is the creator of the Wu-Tang Clan. Which comes from the 36th chamber of Wu-Tang. This motherfucker literally brought, like, the Wu-Tang Clan is the whole idea of, like, you got the two warring clans that he brought together to come to harmony because everyone else was, like, making money and it's like, look, we're all trying to make money. We need to do it legally. He does the composing for Kill Bill. So not only does, like, have you got, like, actors from the 36th chamber of Wu-Tang, from Shogun, the movie they watch in Kill Bill 2, like, like, you know, you were mentioning all these classic martial art movies that even Tarantino loves. Like, most of them have cameos as the Japanese syndicate or the Crazy 88 sequence. Like, honestly, it's like a variable feast of who's who from, like, classic Japanese martial art movies. But I think the biggest thing is, it's like, who's going to do the music? Someone else who's inspired by this, like, movement of movies. It was such a great combination. And I think that's where Kill Bill 2 falls down. Because Robert Rodriguez, I did my research, he did the composing of Kill Bill 2 for a single dollar.
Fucking A.
And you can fucking tell. It's just literally just Robert Rodriguez doing, like, some, like, cowboy western guitar shit, but you've got, like, proper Japanese influence, Chinese influence with the music in Kill Bill. And you just, like, you know, if you know how the RZA, like, produces his music, that's what he draws all that in. And the music, like, you know, it's when she's fighting Owen Ishii in the snow at the end, and all you've got is the water fountain feature, clanking as, like, the scene's metronome. You've just got that sort of slow, unobtrusive score. It was beautiful. Honestly, fuck it. I was wrong. Kill Bill is Pulp Fiction 1, Django Unchained 2, Kill Bill 3, Inglourious Basterds 4. I was wrong. I do not have this much good enough. I do not have this much goodness to say about Inglourious Basterds. Besides the fact that I once parred off a teacher in Salford University because she marked me down for grammar for spelling bastards wrong. And I was like, I actually took the sheet. I ripped the sheet out of my essay, went to her office, slammed it down on the table. I was like, it's spelt like this. It's spelt B-A-S-T-E-R-D-S. Because if it was spelt the right way, it would have to be abbreviated. Mm-hmm. Like almost worldwide. I don't know about probably even America as well, because like you're more against like swearing in like titles. Like even I think mm-hmm. isn't porno abbreviated in Zack and Miri Make a Porno? I think it is over here.
I think so.
Yeah. He did this to like so it wasn't abbreviated, so you could read the whole title, and I was like it's spelt like this. Give me my spelling and grammar mark back. Or I'm actually taking this further, because I'm being taught film, and like I'm being taught media, film and TV mm-hmm. by you. If you don't know this movie is called this, then we got a fucking problem. Of course, I won, so passed Salford University with flying fucking colours. Like this was like my first essay, my first semester. Like we literally mm-hmm. just had to compare two movies, like. I think this Inglourious Basterds is the best way. Like when someone says, oh, it's a great war film, it's like, no, it's not. It's a great fantasy film. Mm-hmm. This movie literally starts with Once Upon a Time in Nazi Occupied France. Boom. This shit's a fantasy. Yep. This shit is Disney.
It is not a fucking war movie.
It just
happens to be set during a war.
Yeah. Like especially like come on look away the way this shit ends, man,
the way it fucking ends.
But like one of my favorite moments in Glorious Bastards is like sort of like Tarantino's ability to take from other movies, like inspiration from other movies. One of my favorite moments in Glorious Bastards is Daniel Brühl's character, the actor. He's in the tower fighting the Allies with the sniper. And that's a parody of Saving Private Ryan with Barry Pepper sniping the Nazis in the church tower. I don't know if that I don't know if that propaganda movie, like, I don't think it's real. Like, I know Goebbels is like he was the propaganda man for the Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if like it's real. There's like I've not done that much research, but I like for me mm-hmm. that shit like felt like hey, if we're gonna big up American snipers, I'm gonna use this movie to say that the Germans were bigging up the German snipers. You know.
There you go.
Like, here's these guys calling themselves the heroes, but here's these guys calling themselves the heroes. You know.
Yep.
History is written by the victor, as we know.
Yep.
God damn this! I was not expecting this to be so different, man. I'm shocked and appalled.
Shocked and appalled.
Shocked and appalled.
So,
why do I like Pulp Fiction so much?
No. So here, I guess my one gripe with Pulp Fiction.
Oh, do not make this worse, Sebastian. There are no gripes.
There are no gripes.
What is your gripe? And like you, the ice is thin, Sebastian. The ice is thin.
So I guess my only thing was just like Bruce Willis.
What's Bruce Willis done to you?
No, I don't know. What's I don't know what
with,
it is.
What's
I,
wrong
I,
with Butch?
Did, like the. Like the number of times that I've seen Pulp Fiction, and it's always when he comes on the screen. Like his whole story, I don't know what the hell it is. I just disconnect from it. Like everything with Travolta and Jackson makes sense. Everything with Roth and everyone else makes sense. But for some fucking reason, Bruce Willis takes me out of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. And it's every time. It's not a bad, like, I have no problem with his performance, but it's just something that my brain does whenever I see him. It's like I don't see the character. I see Bruce Willis, which is fucking weird. Like, I see, you know, Vincent Vega, and I see Uma Thurman as, you know, the boss's wife and all this stuff. All of that stuff resonates with me, and I click with it, and it makes sense, and I fucking love it. But for some goddamn reason, Bruce Willis takes me out of the movie, and it happens every time, dude. That's why I put it at number two, because it's a weird, almost unexplainable moment.
Yeah.
But it's like none of the other movies, not even fucking Death Proof takes me out. I just don't like that movie. But Bruce Willis just, he just does this weird mental gymnastics thing in my fucking brain where I'm like, this is just Bruce Willis doing Bruce Willis things in a Tarantino movie. It's fucking weird, man.
I think Bruce Willis is like his character of Butcher. I think it's great. I think it's one of the better storylines.
I don't know. I don't know what it is, man. Like, I don't know. But it's every time. Every fucking time for some fucking reason.
I'm going to have to make you sit down, watch Pulp Fiction, and just keep your eyes open when Bruce Willis is on the screen again.
Like, I'm not, like, looking away. Like, I'm still watching the fucking movie because there's still more movie
that's
after.
That's so weird.
Right?
Because it's like he's... Like, all the main characters, the idea is that they're all trying to... Like, all of them end their own story getting out of the business that they're in.
Yeah. And then, like, you know, killing Vincent Vega the way that he does just feels... it's a little unsatisfying. To me, anyway.
Well, you don't think Vig Rames is going to send some of his best men?
Oh, no. I'm just saying Vincent Vega went out like a bitch.
Yeah, of course. But, like, you know, that's what happens when you... Comes out of the bathroom.
Out of the bathroom, gets blown away by Bruce Willis.
Yeah, but, like, honestly, like, you know how you wouldn't be in the bathroom? Don't do heroin. You don't get the shits.
That's fair. All right, I will give you that. I will concede that.
That's literally, like, his death is set up, like, earlier in the movie. Like, he's talking about his bowel problems. He, like, it's derived from heroin, all that kind of shit.
Yeah.
And, like, he's also set up as, like, one of Vig Rames' best hitmen.
I don't know if you remember hearing that apparently there was, like, an idea that Tarantino was going to do a prequel about the Vega brothers. You know, John Travolta.
No, I've not heard about this. I know that Michael Madsen is a Vega.
And I remember hearing about that, and like, you're gonna do a prequel. Like, these two were already both pretty fucking old when they died in their respective movies, so you're gonna try to sell these fuckers like almost in their 60s as their younger
You'd have
selves.
To recast, like honestly, oh, yeah. Like if he hadn't fucked up his entire life, you know, you could do Ansel Elgort and Alden Ehrenreich. Those two motherfuckers would work as brothers, and especially as like. Young Madsen and young Travolta.
Travolta, yeah.
Here's a question for you. Do you know how Django Unchained and Kill Bill 2 connect in the Tarantino universe?
Nah.
Beatrix is buried in Paula Schultz's grave, and if you check the years... she's married to King Schultz, Dr. King Schultz, which is Christoph Waltz's character. That's her grave.
Dude.
Yeah.
That's sick.
I love watching Tarantino movies and seeing how they all sort of connect. It's usually like the red apple cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
You got the two cops from Kill Bill 2. They're the two cops in Death Proof.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This is definitely an interesting episode this week, my dude.
Yeah, man. We definitely need to do this. We definitely, like... You know, if we it, like, I feel like we could save Christopher Nolan because we could do this like. Like, say if a director has less than 10 movies, this is the way we should do it. But if they have if they have over, that's when we choose three, or we do your sort of, if two directors are, like, if we agree on, you know, who direct, like, if I ask you later, like, maybe tomorrow, you know, what directors do you have in mind for this series? Mm-hmm. What directors do I have in mind for this series? If we find similars, we can do the whole put two against each other. But yeah, if like, you know, say if it's like Spielberg length of movies, pick three. But if it's less than 10, like Christopher Nolan, until Oppenheimer comes out, we can rank them some bitches.
For sure.
No, I was wrong, by the way. Oppenheimer comes out in July.
Oh, does it?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Cool.
I'm worried, though. Fucking June has just started. Woohoo! Pinch punch, first of the month. Mm-hmm. In 15 motherfucking days, Flash is supposed to open in this country. I can't yet buy tickets. Yeah.
That's weird.
That's like, that is a I resonate with, my guy. Like, because I can't, like, if I go, like, over the other cinema chains, they've already started selling theirs. Odeon, Vue, you know, like, and if I go over there, one, I have to pay full price, and two, all the best seats are gone. I literally now need to wait for Cineworld to wake the fuck up and smell the bacon.
Smell the bacon.
But like you can't do it for anything. You can't pre-book for Flash. You can't pre-book for beyond their like unlimited screening date. You can't pre-book for Transformers, and that comes out in 8 days. Can't book for that
fucking
yet.
A.
That's mad. What else? What, there was another movie that was coming out after Batman, end of June. Can't remember. There was another movie. You can't book for that either. I'm like, what fucking the fuck idiot. Is Cineworld playing at? I'm about to march down to Cineworld HQ and just bonk them on the head. Literally, just bonk like, oi, give me out, bring Big Man. Big Man comes out and was like, oi, bonk. Fucking... Sort your life out. You
do
little.
Your jobs.
Do your gerb. And then just as I leave, just bop him in the willy.
There you go.
I'm walking away and all you hear is, ooh!
Fucking
hell. Yeah, man. Tarantined by Quentin Tarantino. That's what I've called.
Yep.
That's what I've called my file here. Tarantined by Quentin Tarantino.
Oh God! So those are our rankings. That's let us know how you rank Quentin Tarantino. Do you even like Quentin Tarantino? Let us know.
Yeah. Are you on the boat? Like, you know, we can't bypass the fact that I'm pretty sure 9 of these fucking movies, there is a certain producer who is now no longer to be named.
Nope.
And we're meant to believe that this motherfucker, like, Tarantino looks like a weird guy.
He's
not a normal looking motherfucker, especially that this man's fetish for feet.
Yeah.
There is no way he had no idea what was going on. Like, I hold, like, a little bit of me holds this man accountable.
Yeah.
I know you was like, oh, I was just making movies. No, you fucking weren't. Don't you, all right, everyone, don't you lie to me.
That's gonna do it for us. Remember to rate, like, share, subscribe, and I guess we'll catch you in the next one.
And don't forget, free those balls, ladies and gentlemen.
Free damn balls.
And flick those nipples.
Take care, everyone.
Bye.
On this trip, now I'm like delivering out the script.
Come on, man, come join us on the trip. I'm sorry, now we're throwing out the script. I hope you don't charge a penny. I hear the weekend's calling. Now it's time to start. Free ball.
Hi.
This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.